Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Today, my guest is an Army drill sergeant. So I made sure I got up early to get my PT in. I shaved, got my hair in rags, and showed up for formation 15 minutes early. Not really. Anyway, my guest is P.S. Barlow, who is not just a drill sergeant. He's also the creator of the popular G.I. Low comic. So, Pete, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and things like that?
Well, Scott, thank you for having me on the show. As mentioned before, I'm an active duty drill sergeant, and I'm also the author and illustrator of the comic G.I. Low. I've been in the Army for 10 years, and I just re-enlisted for 3 more, so clearly I got a thing going. But I have been writing the comic since I was in basic training. I've been sharing the comic online for about 5 of those 10 years, and I have no intention of stopping.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so for those listeners who might be living under a rock and don't know your comic, G.I. Low, tell us a little bit about what the comic is about and where you came up with the idea for it.
Well, the idea for the comic naturally was born out of the fact that I joined the Army. As hinted by the title G.I. Low, the comic is a way of kind of giving a shout out to the more unmemorable soldiers, or at least, you know, the least qualified. I wanted to do an inverse of G.I. Joe. And that's exemplified by the central character, Sergeant Low, who is out of shape, unqualified, overwhelmed by responsibilities. I don't have any intention of making a comic about super soldiers or the high speed soldiers, because let's just be honest, they're not as funny.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So the comic itself got started when I was in basic training. I had a notebook, because when you first get there, you get a notebook, which you can use for studying or writing down notes, or writing letters to your battle buddies who you got quote unquote killed because of your negligence. Yeah. That was actually a thing. I don't know if that's still a thing in BCT, but AIT, we don't do that. It's probably too creepy. But I had a notebook, and I've always loved doodling. I've never been very good at it, as people who read my comic will attest to. But I wanted to doodle because I just thought everything going around with me was kind of funny, and I just made it into a little comic strip. And for the real, real fans, the full title used to be The Adventures of G.I. Low. Then everyone just called it G.I. Low. So I was like, well, now I'll just drop The Adventures of, bam, gone. Right. The first comic strips that I did, there was no story. There was no character. Low was just this very loose looking caricature of me, just because I'd been used to doing little characters of me. And as the comic has evolved, Low has been able to stand up on his own 2 boots. And he looks less and less like me as the comic has gone on, just because I wanted him to be his own standalone character.
It was probably a good thing too that he doesn't look so much like you, because he sort of gets into some trouble and some antics and things like that. You don't want to exactly associate with yourself.
Again, people are like, well, when is Low going to get promoted to staff sergeant? He's been, a buck sergeant for 6 years now or something like that. And I was like, well, I refuse to be the same rank as Low. Not to mention he's bad at his job, so he's not going to get promoted, really. So I've told people, if I ever make sergeant first class, which, knock on wood, happens sometime in my lifetime, I'll make him a staff sergeant. But again, I like that buffer room between myself and this character I created.
Right. Yeah. And so your motivation then for creating this comic, not just creating it, because, obviously back in basic training, when you're doing your doodles and stuff, that the motivation has changed over the years, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But, But for putting it out now, you know, to, you know, you have, I'm looking at your Facebook page, you have over 25,000 followers who are checking it out on a regular basis. What's your motivation for releasing this, this comic in this sort of kind of humorous medium?
I mean, I love to make people laugh. Took a shot at a stand-up comedy very early in my Army career. It didn't go well. But I mean, if I can kind of give people something funny, all right, like you touched upon now, and I think you did that on purpose, is that, well, obviously 2020 has been a difficult year for everyone on the planet. Mm-hmm. But I debated whether or not should I do comics about, you know, COVID-19. Like, is that funny? Especially since, you know, everyone knows the rules of comedy is tragedy plus time, and I haven't really given it much time.
Right.
But I, like, none of us thought this would go on as long as it has. No. And so I was like, I was like, I'm going to do one COVID-19 comic because I'm an active duty drill sergeant and COVID-19 has changed everything about TRADOC. I was like, well, there's the one. And then it kept going. And I was like, well, nothing has changed. So I kept going and going and going. And, especially since, you know, the news is so continuously grim in this country. If I can, like, bring some levity to this really unpleasant situation, I mean, hopefully I am, and I'm doing my job. But, like, yeah, the comic, for those of you who read it, I don't write Doonesbury. This isn't a political comic. I don't like to really get onto the heavy subject matters. It's more like, what's the deal with the Army Combat Fitness Test, you know? But, yeah, like, I did not want to curb the comic or you know, just completely ignore COVID-19. Yeah, I mean, like, it's anyone who's in TRADOC right now, whether you're cadre or student, I mean, just we went from marching to class every day and calling cadence to you're basically just, you know, double arm interval, you're not calling cadence, you're eating your meals on the drill pad, and you're sitting on a block of tape to make sure that we're spaced out properly.
Wow.
It's kind of surrealist, but, you know, especially this is my second year as a drill sergeant. So compared to the first year, I mean, everything is different. I mean, just yesterday I was, on a baggage detail, because we can't just have, like, soldiers coming and going from commercial airplanes anymore. So, you know, we have to go onto the flight line and receive all their bags as though this is like, you know, combat deployment. And it's just like, I want to document this too, just so that I don't forget this. Mm-hmm. I mean, someday soon, this will all be in the past and it'll become like, hey, do you remember the year 2020? Wasn't that crazy? Remember coronavirus? That was weird. But I just sort of want to document what it was actually like.
Right. So I'm guessing there's no cattle car kind of thing. People no. Getting shoved in those things anymore. You know, I don't even know if that's still a thing. It was definitely when I went through too. Yeah.
I don't like, cause I'm an AIT drill sergeant too. I should probably mention that.
Okay.
And if you read the comic, the comic would be very funny if Lo was a BCT drill sergeant, cause it's more high intense environment. Mm-hmm. But I'm an AIT drill surgeon, so guess what? He gets to become an AIT drill surgeon.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. And I want to go back to one question that I had about, you know, as far as how you create it and where you came up with everything. Is it true that you still make it in Microsoft Paint?
It is true. Much to the chagrin of all of my colleagues who have been trying to get me to join the 21st century. I like it. I know how to use it. And back to the creation of the comic. I mean, when I first did it, it was a pen and paper, and I was just cutting it out of, you know, and mailing it to my friends. And then I got super advanced in pen and paper, and then I would scan it and then put it onto a computer and then, like, you know, share it. But the beautiful thing about Microsoft Paint, and I have this in common with PowerPoint Ranger and, you know, Claw of Knowledge, other people that use, like, the really rudimentary stuff to make this, is I love that you can find it anywhere. Every computer has MS Paint, as long as it's, right, you know, an MS computer. Yeah. So the comic took a huge break, 5 years. So half of my Army career, I did not do the comic. So basically I did it in basic training, and then I took a 5-year, hiatus. And then I was stationed in Germany, and I remember I was miserable. It was like all I wanted from the army. I wanted to get stationed in Germany, and I finally got it, and I was not happy. I was like, what? No, this was supposed to solve all of my problems, and it didn't. And I didn't know how to articulate it without pissing off my friends and family that had heard me say for years, I want to get stationed in Germany. So I thought a good way to do it so it wouldn't be too whiny was to do it in comic strip form. So I was on staff duty once. I pulled up Microsoft Paint, and oh, by the way, if you read the early comics, they are brutal. I mean, just the worst drawing ever, because I hadn't quite figured out Microsoft Paint. I was literally just taking the little pencil tool and, drawing this stuff and then copy pasting it because I'm lazy. But I was just like, I want to explain in a funny way why I hate being stationed in Germany. And I just was like, by the way, I'm a completely shameless self-promoter. So I mean, like, the relief for staff duty comes in, and instead of like briefing them on everything I've done, I'm like, hey, look at this comic I did. Is this funny? Tell me it's funny. And they're like, yeah, it's funny, but did you do all the checks? Yeah, I did the checks, but I also drew a fun comic. And so immediately I just emailed it to myself, share it on Facebook, like, tell me it's funny. And then everyone's like, it's funny, it's good, you should keep doing this. And so the first really year of the comic, I was doing these things on my lunch break, because I'm on a computer. There's MS Paint, and I'm like, okay, well, I could spend an hour and a half, going to get food, or I could just sit here and, make a comic about something weird that happened at work. And the earliest comics, there was no story, there was no structure. I mean, Lo goes from Germany to Afghanistan to Fort Stewart, Georgia, like without any through line. It's a complete shuffle mode of a comic. But it was just like I would do little observations, like things you don't expect in the army, like, for example, having to watch people pee. Were you a non-commissioned officer? All right. So yeah, they left that out of the, Go Army video. It's like
Recruiter
pee
left that
all
out,
that you can pee in the army. So yeah, you just expect to pee in a cup. You don't expect to watch, a third of the males in your company have to pee. You're just standing there. It's like, okay, sir, how's the family? Well, I can tell you're hydrated. So just trying to find the little awkward moments that don't often get reflected, like movies and TV shows. Comic strips have always been great at finding the idiosyncrasies of the army that, people don't think of. I am definitely coloring within the lines that were created by Bill Mauldin and Mort Walker. Like, comic strips about the military have been around as long as the military.
Sure, absolutely. And it's, for you, going back to your days in Germany when you pick this back up, it probably served as, almost in a way, a therapeutic way of releasing that frustration that, that you had with your day-to-day activities and things like that.
GI Low is my therapist.
Yeah, exactly. That's I guess where I was getting with that is, it seems like it probably was a great way for you to kind of vent without necessarily pissing anyone off.
Yeah, and that's a very important point, is whenever you're doing, whenever you're kind of taking the piss out of the army, you do run the risk of angering your leadership, which, God knows no soldier really wants. I think one of those moments where and by the way, I'm still active duty. I'm still making the comic. I'm still prone to pissing people off. But one of my favorite moments ever, was when my first book, published through Divided by Zero. There's my shout out. So I published a book, and it did very surprisingly well. I outsold all the Garfields for one weekend. Bam, it's gonna be my tombstone.
Nice.
But I remember I was at my company, and my company commander called me into his office, and I'm like, oh God, what did I do? What did my soldiers do? And he goes, can you autograph this? And I was like, I think it's gonna be okay.
Yeah, he wasn't too pissed off with
Yeah.
that,
I know I've like Bill Mauldin managed to piss off General Patton. I'm friends with Mark Baker, who writes Private Murphy, and he's explained that, you know, he has, you know, gotten angry emails from the Pentagon. I have avoided that so far, if only because I think I have a less edgy comic than, you know, those two very talented cartoonists. But it's
Right.
still just always on that precipice of, like, especially as a drill sergeant, you know, like, my content is about, you know, the soldiers in training and the drill sergeants, you know. I'm like, I'm kind of making fun of a bunch of teenagers that I'm in charge of.
Right,
And it's
right.
like, oh, this could, I'm waiting for the moment when one of the soldiers files a complaint against me, because, you know, like, I didn't like how I was portraying the comic, and then I'd have to tell them, like, I don't make comics about my soldiers that are still here. I wait until you leave, you know. It's a little gesture of you know, professionalism.
Sure, yeah, and these days you might even get a call from their mom or something, and
I would not be surprised. Or like someone on, like, you know, like families of soldiers in training here would be like, my little boy was publicly mocked on a, you know, a public forum about, you know, the fact that he didn't shave this morning. He has a very sensitive demeanor and he cannot take it. I demand the comic beat. You just canceled. So
Yeah, and
the fear is
that's a
real.
definite possibility. I can see that type of thing happening, but you know, you seem to, you know, excuse the pun, you know, stay within the lines and you know, not get anyone too riled up with the stuff. But it's funny too, and I think you know, part of it, there's an artistic side to it where you're using the medium that you have to express yourself and your, you know, your maybe frustrations or your things that you consider funny or whatever, but you know, it's also a good way to express yourself, you know, as
Yeah,
well.
absolutely. I would say, like, I don't necessarily consider my comic necessarily art, but I mean, there's that art therapy component of it. Because, like, if you read the comic, I mean, I'm dealing with, like, so much of the comic is Low embarrassing himself at work. And, you know, I tell people Low isn't me, but all of my worst qualities get put into him. So all of my shortcomings as a non-commissioned officer and a soldier, anytime something happens where I'm just like, racked with shame for like a week, I'm like, you know what? That's funny. I think Lowe should do that. Because it's a way of like taking ownership of the embarrassment and ownership of, you know, just the feelings of, like, if you read the Drill Sergeant Academy comics, I mean, the Drill Sergeant Academy is challenging. And I remember when I first found out I was on orders for, you know, drill sergeant duties, I was like, this is a mistake. This is so, like, no one who has met me has ever thought this is a drill sergeant candidate. And I told people that, and they were like, yeah, I never could picture you as a drill sergeant. Like, thanks, asshole. And so I got there, and, you know, God bless my squad. They're amazing people. I'm so glad I graduated with them. But they were kind of like, you? I can't see you. You seem so, and like, I'm just like the most pogue human being you've ever met in your life. For those of you who don't have a good visual, I look like Steve from Blue's Clues. It doesn't really challenge, it doesn't really conjure up the image of Arlie Ermey. And so just like, and all of my like insecurities were magnified at the academy. I was just like, just telling myself, like, you're a non-commissioned officer. You can't even do this. You can't explain this. You can't, you know, good God, why do you keep bending your arms at the elbows when you march? And so I really try, by the way, the whole time I was at the academy, I did not bring my laptop. I didn't bring anything to post the comics online. I just gave myself that summer off, got back and immediately started making comics about all of my memories of the Drill Sergeant Academy. And I really wanted to kind of touch upon that, that insecurity, that, like, the same thing that kept me up at night at the Drill Sergeant Academy. I wanted to make it funny and own it. And then that's continued throughout the being a drill sergeant. I'm racked with insecurity all the time. Like, did you do that right? Did you? And like, anytime I have, like, here's a story. So drill sergeants are known for their one-liners and, you know, the quips and whatnot. You'll just have a moment. Like, I had a soldier, I was in charge of remedial physical training, and she was explaining to me like what we could do that would help her out, and I just screamed at her, this isn't Burger King, you can't have it your way. And then I just like walked away, like, what did I say? What? I think that
Right.
was funny. So, again, if I can put that on paper and back to the therapeutic component, if others can find themselves in that comic or in the comics in general, then I feel like I'm kind of doing my job. I'm so relieved that people have been so positive towards the comic. I remember I've had people like, if you read the comic, Lo is overweight, and people have been like, oh, I'm so glad that there's representation of the soldiers that always have to get taped in a comic strip. Like, okay, cool, I'm glad I can do that for you. I had people getting ready for the Drill Sergeant Academy who messaged my page for about a year just saying, like, what advice do you have? How can you help me out? And I told them, okay, did you read the comics about Lo at the academy? Do the exact opposite and you'll be fine.
That's perfect. It's probably really great advice too. Especially, for anyone who takes a look at the comics that, he is doing the wrong thing more often than not, in some cases, and it seems like not following what, in his footsteps is probably the right way to go. And you mentioned earlier a couple books that you have or you said you have one book. I believe,
I
don't you
have
have
two books out. They're both available on Amazon,
okay.
and they're published through Divided by Zero. It's a veteran-owned publishing house. So the first book is BFA, so either Blank Fire Adapter or Bachelor's Fine Arts. That was basically created out of a mistake I made when I graduated from college with a degree in film production. And I know it's a weird through line, but again, it's just proof that you can get great jobs when you have a degree in film production. And so I was in basic training and they issued us our BFA. And I was like, well, last year I got a BFA, a Bachelor's of Fine Arts, and this year I get a blank firing adapter. And then I later got corrected that film production is a Bachelor's of Arts, not a Bachelor's of Fine Arts, because film is not fine. But the thing is, I had to change Lowe's bachelor's degree. So he's a creative writing major. The second book is called Mosquito Wings and Teardrops. And I've got a third book in the works that we're working on right now with Divided by Zero. It's going to be called A New Low because I realize I don't exploit the fact that there's an easy pun in the name of my comic enough. And that was actually someone in the comment section decided it was Joaquin Blout, I think, if you're listening, how's it going? He just wrote like, well, this is a new low, and I was like, you know what? I love that. That's the next book title.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about them and say where people can pick up a copy of those books, and I'll try to link those in the show
Thank
notes
you very
too
much.
afterwards. So, when this episode eventually comes out, we'll have those in there, and when the third book comes out, just let me know, and I'll be sure to update that too. So, before we started recording, you were talking a little bit about I forget the comic that you said, but he was talking about
Oh, Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle. I'll let you put it into words better than I will by asking the question. So,
I will do my best to put into words better than the both of us can. The formula of tragedy, comedy is tragedy plus time. But another way of looking at it that I think was really beautiful, I just saw this interview with Dave Chappelle, and he was talking about more importantly the decision to leave the Chappelle Show and how it was formed by his decision to go into comedy. He as a kid he was bullied. And he was always laughed at, and by becoming funny, he found a way to control the laughter, which I think a lot of people can identify with. Like I was bullied a lot as a kid. I know it must be shocking, but and it was a long, arduous process before I could get people to laugh with me instead of at me. And the formula right now is still about 60-40. Anytime I've listened to a stand-up comedian talk about, why did you get into this? And it was because it was like, well, because I was miserable and I wanted to find a like, I wanted to own the people that were mocking me. I think that's very true of the comic strip too. Because I mentioned this before. Every time I meet someone, they're like, "I can't see you as a drill sergeant," or something to that effect. I mean, for years, I had people, "I can't see you as a soldier." And I think by magnifying that in the comic, like if I did a comic where a loose alter ego of mine was this, like, this badass who was going into Afghanistan and saving the day, and he's got beautiful women all, on both of his arms and all that stuff, people would be like, "Yeah, that's a wish fulfillment. You're like, you seem desperate. This is sad." By making a comic about someone who was terrible at his job, but it was so much worse as an NCO than I am. I think it kind of, again, it's sort of like, well, you think I'm a bad soldier, you should look at this guy, I don't know if that's any less desperate, but that's sort of, my thought. And it does sort of like, it's projecting that insecurity, hopefully in a funny manner, for lots of people, to sort of like, can you see this guy as a drill sergeant kind of deal? I don't know.
Well, I think a lot of us, myself included, grew up in a way that, maybe similar to you, where, like, people are like, "Oh, I don't see you as a drill sergeant. I don't, maybe not even as a soldier," or whatever. And I think it was probably a shock to some people when I said I was joining the army too. And it was like, not, I mean, I graduated with an accounting degree, probably the most mundane
Nerd.
nerd thing that you could possibly do. And then I went infantry, and they were like, "What? Like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why aren't you sitting behind a desk somewhere crunching numbers? Like, I could see that, but not necessarily going and
You told
kicking in
me this,
doors
and
and
I'm like,
stuff."
why did you join the army? Accounting, that's like a real thing.
I
Like,
know.
you don't need a film degree to become a film director. But like accounting degree, like that's like a real major.
Yeah, no, and so I had that before I even joined the army. But it was one of those things where, when I joined the army, I was just pissed off at the country's reaction to 9/11, where the army's recruiting numbers at the time were at like all-time lows, and they were like, they're struggling to meet their numbers. And I was like, well, why are people just forgetting what was happening, like, just a couple of years ago when 9/11 happened? And then I was like, well, I'm not really helping the situation either by sitting here on my ass and
Oh, that's pretty selfless.
not doing anything. So I said, well, screw it. I'm young enough, I'm healthy enough. I didn't go active duty. I went National Guard, but so I still was able to continue working my accounting job that I had. But I did deploy to Afghanistan. Still did the things that I wanted to do to help out the country. And so I hit that mark by doing that. But yeah, people looked at me back then, and it was like, yeah, you might try, but I don't know that you're going to actually do this. So, good luck to you, but, hats off, whatever. And at the time, like, I barely worked out. Like, I was like out of shape, and running a mile, I was about to double over and puke all over the place and stuff. Like, I just was not that in shape or
I
whatever. But
think I was successfully able to do 20 push-ups at my recruiting station. She was
yeah.
like, "Well, how many do I need to pass?" 40. What? This is, oh God, I have to get in twice as good shape as I am now.
Right.
Four years at film school won't make you the most in shape person ever, you know?
No. 4 years of any school, I think, any sort of college will not make you very in shape unless you're, trying to,
Majoring in CrossFit.
maybe something like that, yeah, or if you're, trying to get good at beer pong or something. And but, so on that topic of, people coming into the army, maybe are not quite so sure of themselves. Maybe they're, coming from a place like maybe you and I came from, where they're not so sure that they're gonna be able to make it through or whatever. Is there anything that you would like to tell the people who are considering joining the military? Anything that help make your job as a drill sergeant easier, or, other people in your shoes to, help them out, before they even get to the army?
Absolutely. I think the most important thing in terms of getting through it is to not lose your sense of humor. people tend to get very fatalistic when they're in TRADOC, and just this like you'll hear like oh my god, I've ruined my life, or oh, this is worse than prison, and they're being very dramatic, if only because they're teenagers, and teenagers have one mode, and it's dramatic. And a lot of them, like we have, you know, like behavioral health issues, you know, all the time. Like our poor chaplain is just exhausted from having, I mean, he's the nicest human being on earth, but he's just exhausted from everything he has to do. But remember to laugh. This is funny. One of my favorite memories from basic training, and by the way, when I got to base training, I was, you know, terrified. I mean, I never wanted to join the Army. It was just this decision that was born out of economic needs, because I graduated into the Great Recession, back in 2009, and it was like, oh God, I need to not be homeless. And so I was like, well, what can I do? And, you know, join the Army. So all the stereotypes of boot camp, I was just building up this big monster in my head about what it was going to be like. And you get there and it's like, well, this isn't as bad, but it's still bad. And we had this one drill sergeant in my platoon, and she was wrath of God, terrifying. And just, she just never stopped screaming, and she was always smoking us. And she was just like this, exactly what you picture when you think of a drill sergeant. She was it. And she wasn't in her platoon, but she came into our bay once to find something like that. And she's just like instantly honing in on every mistake that we have. She's ripping open our wall lockers and tearing stuff down and just calling us a piece of shit. And just, we're the dumbest moron she's ever met in her life. And she comes up to someone and she goes, when I was a little girl, my mommy told me there were idiots like you. I didn't believe her, but she was correct. And it took all of my self-control not to scream, that's aliens. You just did the line from Aliens, and you just changed monsters with idiots. And it was kind of this moment of like clicking. It was like, oh, they're kind of faking it. They're doing what anyone else does, which, if they want to sound intimidating, you know, they quote James Cameron movies, you know.
When I was in basic training, I have a terrible fear of heights. Like, the worst. Like,
did you go to Jackson?
No, I was at Fort Benning,
infantry. Never mind. Yeah,
infantry. Yeah. So, I mean, I could be on a stepladder changing a light bulb, and my knees are trouble, right? So, we're on the rappel tower. It's like a 3-story tower, and I have to rappel off of that, right? Which,
yeah, we had one of those at Jackson too.
It was terrible. So I get up to the top, and there's a drill sergeant at the top, and, you know, to make sure you're hooked in, your harness is all hooked in and everything like that. Right. And he can tell I am scared shitless. And so I go, I take a step over the edge, and I'm getting ready. I got the ropes, you know, like where they're supposed to be and everything. And as soon as both feet got over the edge, we're touching the wall, he's like, holy shit, give me your hand. You're not clipped in right. I think I achieved flight that day by how fast I got back up over the wall. I didn't grab his hand. I just like jumped up and like climbed back over the wall, and it was the scariest thing. But he couldn't catch his breath. He was laughing so hard at my reaction to this. So, I mean, afterwards, you know, now this is 15 some odd years later, I can look back and I can laugh at it. But it's,
oh my God, if I ever get an opportunity, I'm doing that.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
I might lose my hat, but I would just like, oh my God, just if you can scare the people, oh God.
It scared me so bad. And then I had to go back over the wall and do, like, actually rappel down, which was even worse. But I could totally laugh at that now, you know, there's humor in that. And I think he was trying to lighten the situation for me and, you know, make it not so serious. He failed miserably. Like that was a total fail, but he totally could have given me a heart attack that day. That was terrible. But I did it. I ended up going over the wall and I rappelled down. I got down, and every time I've rappelled since then, we've done it in training and stuff, like off mountains and things like that. Oh, every time I think to myself, double check to make sure it's all clipped in right. So even though he was just trying to be a jerk or whatever, and make a scary situation funny or whatever the case may be, it still reminded me years and years later, double check, make sure you're all hooked in right.
He did his job.
He did, yeah. And like the training worked. Like I've never had an incident where I, got hurt rappelling or anything like that. It always scared me. I never liked doing it, but I could always do it safely. And so he definitely did his job there. So that would be awesome. If you do that, that would be I
might get in trouble,
I'm throwing some soldier under the bus right now by saying like totally do that to that kid who's scared shitless of going over the rappel tower. I think it's important to to echo what you were saying, it's important to have some fun with basic training.
Basic training, AIT, it's very insular. Like that's what I tell my soldiers all the time when they're like, like drill sergeant, I feel like I'm never gonna leave this place, or like the fucking high school, pardon my language, the high school drama that happens, oh good gravy. Like the soldiers, like they're constantly bullying each other and bickering with each other, and they all hate living with each other and all this stuff. And I try to empathize with them because I was in their boots once. Because most of them are right out of high school. And if you remember high school is the world. Like when you're in it, it's both of us have an internet presence where we produce content that we actually literally have access to the world as long as they've got the internet. But when you're in high school, a bad reputation, it feels like a life changer. Because when you're there, just everyone is there. And then you graduate high school and you're like, I don't remember 90% of the names of anyone I went to high school with, but for 4 years, I was really obsessed with impressing them. And that it's like that because they go, most of them graduate high school and then enlist in the Army. There's just this feeling of like, oh, I don't think they like me. I embarrass myself. It's like, guys, you're here for 6 months. You will leave this place and you will immediately start forgetting, and it's going to be cool, and you're going to be in duty stations all over the world, and you're only going to be there for a few years, and then you're going to go to the next duty station somewhere else in the world. Just lighten up a little bit.
Reset button that you get, amazing. You can screw up and then just suck it up and deal with it for the next few months and then move on to the next place.
Yeah,
and no one's going to remember you.
So for anyone who, especially if they're younger, because when you're younger, your brain is still forming and is still trying to figure out this whole being a human thing. It just takes solace in knowing that everything is very temporary. And when you're in TRADOC, it's a drop of water in the ocean that is your life. So just relax as much as you can. I mean, don't let your standards go to the wayside. Again, like for me, I'll say laughter is the best medicine. As long as I've been alive, it's helped me through the worst times. So if you're having a really bad time while you're in basic training or AIT, crack jokes. At the very end of your time in training, if the drill sergeants say, all right, I want to see impersonations of us, volunteer. I remember I didn't do that when I was in basic because I was too scared of the drill sergeants. But I did that at the Drill Sergeant Academy. And it was like, it was very much like getting to go through basic a second time. And at the very end, they're like, all right, let's get impersonations of us. I was like, I'm not missing this opportunity again. Cause guess what? I don't want to go through basic again.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. But by the way, the drill sergeant, we love those impersonations. They're hysterical. If only because sometimes they're so bad, they're good.
Right. Yeah. And they're, we definitely did that. And I did not raise my hand. I was not going to volunteer that. I kind of, throughout basic training, I kind of just try to keep in the shadows and not be anyone who volunteered too much or, got myself out there.
I wanted that more than anything. Well, actually, I wanted more than anything graduate basic training, but more than anything, I wanted to be that forgotten person. On day two of basic training, I choked on a waffle and a drill sergeant had to perform the Heimlich on me. which I could have very easily let break my morale. But instead, I try to make that into my thing, where, like, you know, self-deprecation is huge. You know, we talk about comedy, but that's so broad. Self-deprecation has always benefited me because, again, it's me making fun of me to take that away from the people that would make fun of me with, like, malicious intent. So, again, it was like, you know, like, man, you can't, you know, disassemble the 249. Man, I choked on a waffle, and even I could do it, you know, kind of deal. So if you have embarrassing moments, own it. Make it your thing, because that's your mistake. You get – that's yours. So be the first one to crack jokes about it, because otherwise a bunch of assholes are going to do it for you.
Exactly. And you gotta get okay with that quick, because it's gonna happen one way or the other. Either you need to be able to make those jokes about yourself, or they're coming one way or the other. Yeah. So,
and guess how many people from basic training remember that? Probably me, and only me. So again, don't let it like bog you down. Because man, like I had this great moment when I was back home for Christmas leave, and I was seeing all my best friends from high school, and we're just talking, and I was like, you know, like, man, oh man, I was so awkward back then. And one of my best friends turns to me and goes, Pete, shut up, we were all so awkward back then. I was like, oh, all right. So try not to beat yourself up too much either.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I was one of the older soldiers going through basic training when I went through, because I had already graduated high school, graduated college, a couple years, you know, working out of college. So I was already in my mid-20s or so, 25, something like that. 25, 26, somewhere around there. And so I was already older. I saw the insecurities of the younger, the 17, 18 year old kids who are going through, you know, the late teens or whatever, you know, going through it, and how it resembled high school so much. And I kind of felt like, you know, there's the joke of the old veteran who's using his GI Bill. He's going to college, and he's like almost like Billy Madison. He's in college, and he feels like he's so old with all these young kids in class with them. And he's looking around. It's like, you know, what the hell do you have to complain about? You know, you got nothing to complain about, that type of thing. And then I look at some of these kids, and I felt that way in basic training, because I felt like I was the old guy. And, you know, I think there was like one other guy who's older than me, but one or two, but I looked at all these young kids, and I was like, you guys have absolutely nothing to worry about. Like, you have your whole life ahead of you. You're going to be fine.
Yeah. You're also in like the best physical shape you will ever be in your Army career.
I know.
What like people have asked me is, what's harder, basic training or the Drill Sergeant Academy? And it's a 50-50 either way. Because one cool thing about the Drill Sergeant Academy that we didn't have in basic is weekends off, bam. Was not expecting that and did not bring much civilian clothes. So yeah, people thought I was CID because like we'd go out to we go out on our weekends. Like, why are you wearing your uniform? I was like, I don't have civvies. Are you CID? No, I'm just really awkward and cheap. But the hardest part about basic training compared to the Drill Sergeant Academy versus basic training is your body has aged with you. So it was about 8 years between basic training and the Drill Sergeant Academy for me. And so I remember, like, you know, in basic you get hurt and then the next day you're fine. And then like this time around, like, you know, you're at the confidence course, and then the next day it's like, oh, my knees don't work. we have a rock. Okay. I'm just going to grin and bear it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think another, if I was to go through a second basic training, you know, whether it was something like the Drill Sergeant Academy, or, you know, if I decided to reenlist and I had to go through it all over again, I think the hard thing for me would be the fact that I already did this, and now I got to go do it again. And I got to go get yelled at again, as if I've never done this before and I don't know what I'm doing, that type of thing. I'd probably be like, mentally, I'd just be exhausted with that, and just like, all right, knock it off.
Yeah, like, it's, I got this. For me, I lucked out because my brain reverted back to being a private. Because it was like, I went to basic at Jackson. I went to the Drill Sergeant Academy at Jackson. I could see my old bay from my barracks room. it at Jackson. So it was very much this recall mode. Because I was a staff sergeant at the time, still am a staff sergeant. And I remember you get there and you're kind of like, people are like, oh, are you afraid of being like, you know, like yelled at by someone who's the same rank as you? For me, the drill sergeants approached us, you know, the same ones that were same rank as me. There was no ego. It was just, yes, drill sergeant, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, it's worse. If any of you listening out there are going to go to the Drill Sergeant Academy, do not say the following phrases: hoo-ah, roger, or negative. The drill sergeant leaders will destroy you, because I said all of those things. If you read the comic about the Drill Sergeant Academy, that was one of the first things I did, was make a comic about that awkward moment when, like, I got there and you're signing in and the drill sergeant signing in is like, is this information correct to the best of your understanding? And I go, hoo-ah. He goes, we don't say hoo-ah here. It's yes, drill sergeant, no, drill sergeant. I go, roger. Like, oh my God, I didn't mean to do that. I'd never seen a drill sergeant angrier than a time that I said negative, and he's just negative. I'm like, oh my God, drill sergeant, don't kill me. And I'm a staff sergeant and a combat vet at this time. And it was like, what? Oh my God. So yeah, if you're going, don't say any of those things. Just say yes, drill sergeant, no, drill sergeant. That is it.
And in basic training or AIT, are you still not? Soldiers still not apologize to you? Like, I know when I was in basic training, and I forget what I did, but I remember standing there and I was looking at the drill sergeant. And I said, sorry, drill sergeant. He goes, don't say
did
sorry.
You just call me a sorry drill sergeant.
Yeah,
I said that. Of course I do.
But he said, don't say sorry. And I said, I apologize, drill sergeant. Like, I really was sorry. And I said, and he's like, get the hell out of my face.
Oh yeah. No, I steal all the lines. Like, there's no, I may be a writer, but damn, like sometimes I just have to copy paste from my drill sergeants and drill sergeant leaders from the past. Anytime someone says, sorry, did you just call me sorry, drill sergeant? Cause you know what? It works. It's effective.
Yeah.
Anytime someone says, one of my favorite, you know, like if I'm going to do it so often, I like to at least do a turn of phrase occasionally. So like people will be like, I appreciate you, drill sergeant. I'm like, don't appreciate me, appreciate your recruiter. Just because it gets boring after a while.
Yeah, if you're doing the same ones over and over and over, I'm sure it
does.
But also going back to what you were saying before, it's good to have a sense of humor. For you, even you know, in your job, you know, dealing with some of the craziness and stupidity sometimes that might come with it. Like, it's, you have to have a sense of humor.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm the funny drill sergeant. I would certainly love it if I was. I think my reputation is I'm the bipolar drill sergeant. So I got something, you know.
There is something there. Yeah. No, that's great. As we kind of wrap this up here, do you have any last words of wisdom for people where they might be in a situation like you were in Germany, and they thought that this is what they wanted, maybe in their career or whatever, and they're just sucking it up and dealing with it, but they're not happy about it, or you know, anything like that? Any last words of wisdom that might be able to help people out with that type of situation?
The advice I give my soldiers that are having a really bad time is the same advice I would give to any soldier or any service member that's having a really rough time. Create, don't consume, create. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone about the consuming thing. I'll spend hours scrolling through Facebook on my phone and realize, well, that was, you know, my morning. Let me, you know, eventually, you know, shave and brush my teeth. But if you're in a bad place, create something from that bad place. I talk to my soldiers all the time. Like, obviously I have my thing. I have a comic strip. But if you don't want to do something like that, just draw. Or if you can't draw, write. If you have a musical instrument, play your musical instrument, sing, do something where you're taking those feelings and you're putting it out. Cause you know what? What you put out there might be appreciated by more people than you realize.
For sure.
I created this comic thinking I'd make a few of my friends laugh. And as you said at the top of the hour, I have 25,000 followers now. I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would be on podcasts talking about doodles I made during my lunch break on Microsoft Paint. But you might, I'm not even saying I'm necessarily talented, you might have a talent that people like. So if you can take those horrible feelings and make something, others won't really like it. And you might have this instilled pride in yourself. You might discover some hidden talent. I never aspired to make comic strips. And guess what? It's the biggest thing I'm known for. So right. If you want to dance, dance. If you want to cook, cook. If you want to become an architect, become an architect. But just the point is, take your feelings and what's I'm looking for? Make them tangible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree. Do something with them. I do this podcast. I create this and put it out there. And if it helps one person, cool. If it helps 1,000 people, even better, you know, but, I had no expectations of really, getting any huge following or anything. I just wanted to put some helpful information out there and get things like PTSD and suicide and things like that in a more, in a situation where that people are more aware of it and can maybe do something for the better, with it. But things like drawing, dancing, playing an instrument, sculpting something out of clay or, whatever,
yeah.
Anything like that, is going to help express yourself and get those things out. And it's the same reason why probably people go to talk therapy, where they're getting those emotions out and they're just doing it in a different format. You can draw. Maybe somebody else can't draw, but everyone can talk, So you can,
for anyone out there who is scared to draw because they don't think they're very good, look at my early artwork. Look at any of my comics that I've ever done and look at the hands. Clearly an inability to draw does not hinder you from having a successful webcomic out there. So love of God, just keep drawing.
Well, and like anything, you get better with practice.
Oh,
you know?
God. Yeah. Yeah.
When you're a kid learning to tie your shoes, like it was probably the hardest thing in the world for you at the time. But then once when you figured it out, like you practice it and eventually figure it out. Now it's second nature, right? Same thing with drawing or playing an instrument or whatever. Like you don't think Jimi Hendrix just picked up a guitar and just started like jamming out. Like he had to practice like yeah. everybody else.
If you're out there and you're a prodigy, I hate you. The rest of us had to practice, damn it.
This was okay. Everyone else who's listening is not going to be able to see this, but I'm going to show Pete. This was today, this morning.
I love it.
This is my attempt at making a G.I. Low.
That's
sketch.
Really good. I you showed me this. I was like, did I send that to you?
No.
I'm not even kidding. Thanks.
No, I took a look at your logo on the Facebook page, and I kind of copied off of that. But I've just recently started getting into sketching, as a kind of art form or whatever. And I haven't done too many sketches yet, but. Figured this interview kind of inspired me to do a quick sketch of that. So I did that.
Do me a favor and scan that. I can like share it to the page, just.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. I posted to my Instagram. If, anyone who's listening wants to go check it out, you can go, find a little doodle of, G.I. Low, on there too. So it's definitely
better than some of the drawings I've done of Low. So, you got that going for you.
I'll definitely send that to you. So that'd be awesome. So again, thank you, Pete, for being on the show, sharing what you've shared.
It was my pleasure.
I think the advice that you gave is really spot on. I think hopefully, anyone who's listening to this, at the top before we started recording, I was saying to you that, I kind of wanted to keep this lighthearted, and I think, inject a little bit of humor in this, but I think that kind of went along well with the advice that you're giving, laugh and, poke fun at yourself sometimes, you know, make yourself the butt of the joke or whatever the case may be, and make things funny, make life funny, because it, I mean, it really is. If you stop and look around, it's not as serious as everyone makes it out to be.
Anytime you think the world is too serious, just remember this. The world created the duck-billed platypus.
Exactly. And that is probably the most absurd creature that has ever graced the planet. So so thank you again for joining us, and I really appreciate it, and keep doing the comic, because it's really
keep doing the podcast. You're doing a great job.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.